Hello, friends. Welcome to Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Washington, just outside beautiful Seattle, Washington, here in the United States. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. Today's show will be really special because we'll be interviewing some really incredibly interesting people. During the first hour from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m., I will be interviewing Dr. Raymond Moody, who's the best-selling author of 12 books, including Life After Life, which has sold over 13 million copies worldwide, and Reunions, as well as numerous articles in the academic and professional literature. He is probably the most famous and leading authority on near-death experiences, a phrase he coined in the late 70s. And he'll be such a I'm so happy to have him on today. He'll be on in a few minutes. During the second hour from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m., I'll be interviewing United States Air Force Colonel Billy Woodward, who was the former base area commander of Area 51 in Nevada in the late 60s. He'll also be channeling some profound and very important messages for humanity from his father Zora in the inner earth. I actually had him on the show last Friday, but when I spoke to him again this week, he had so many more messages for humanity that I decided to bring him on. Before we go to our guests, I'd like to tell you some upcoming events. On June 8th, which is just in about 2 weeks from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m., Michiko Hayashi, the global director of the Wonderful Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo, Japan, will be dedicating a permanent memorial to the late Dr. Masaru Emoto at the Artesian Springs in downtown Olympia at 415 East 4th Avenue. The event is being sponsored by the City of Olympia Parks and Recreation Department, and it's also free and open to the public, and I hope you can all come. Then a few days later, on June 10, 11, and 12, here in the United States, in Olympia, Washington, I'm also having my own UFO and spiritual metaphysical conference called the Galactic Wisdom Conference. At that conference, Michiko Hayashi will also be giving a presentation, along with Japan's most famous Hado therapist, who will be demonstrating and giving a presentation using Hado machines during the conference to heal people. Dr. Emoto, before he passed away in 2014, successfully treated approximately 10,000 people with these machines, and this will be an incredible opportunity to see how these machines work. There are a few spots still available for those who'd like to be healed by the treated and healed by the machines. If you're interested, please send me an email to outoftheworld1150@gmail.com. I apologize. I know some people have called about it during the last week, and I was out of the country, but I will be getting a hold of everyone this weekend. But if you'd like to get a treatment, please send me an email or call me at 509-750-9793. Other guests included at the conference include Professor Gerald Pollack, who's, in my opinion, is one of the world's most famous water scientists, Gordon Asher Davidson, a contactee of the Galactic Alliance, Scott Lemriel, the author of the Ceres Agenda and a contactee of the Galactic Alliance for the past 55 years, Colonel Billy Woodard, who will be on my second hour today, who's from the inner earth and will be channeling messages from his father from the inner earth, Debbie Holtz, a fabulous and well-known Australian Aboriginal healer, Teresa Carroll, a wonderful healer and psychic from the Seattle area, Carolyn White, an aura and chakra reader and healer who will photograph people's auras, Garnet Schildhauser, a good friend of mine, and he's also a famous Canadian psychic who's the author of A Dance of Heavenly Bliss, and finally, Alfred Lebermont Weber, an international judge and UFO expert. The Hado machines, I should tell you, will also be for sale during the conference. They cost $6,000, but they're very effective. And if you're interested in purchasing one of these machines, please give me a call at 509-750-9793 here in the United States, or please send me an email to outoftheworld1150@gmail.com. Finally, at the conference, I'll also be showing some incredibly interesting films from one of Japan's most famous movie producers. His name is Tetsu Shiratori, as well as films from Hollywood's a famous French Hollywood spiritual film director named Emmanuel Eiter. On Friday, June 10th, during the evening, I'll be showing two films from Mr. Shiratori, Relevation and Inori, or The Power of Prayer. Relevation was just finished last month, and it'll be the first time this film has been shown in North America. Relevation is an environmental and spiritual film that shows how people in Japan are using what's called EM, or effective microorganisms, to clean up Fukushima and other places in Japan, And what's amazing about this EM is that where it has been used, it's reduced the amount of radiation in the soil of around Fukushima by 80 to 90%, and also in the waters as well. And it's all been done organically. For those of you interested, also EM has been used to clean up the rivers in Tokyo. And because the river water in Tokyo is now so clean, salmon have been reintroduced to the rivers in Tokyo, and they're actually having salmon runs in Tokyo now. This is amazing news, and the film is incredibly interesting. I actually saw the film last month when I was in Finland at another conference, or earlier this month, and you'll be fascinated on how they've done it in Japan, and I think these techniques for cleaning up the planet in a safe and biological good way will be just amazing. The second film is called Inori, The Power of Prayer. The film is about how the director, Mr. Shiratori, was diagnosed with brain cancer in 2007. And after his doctors told him that he would die and there was no hope for him, a group of friends started praying for him. And within 6 months, his brain cancer completely disappeared. And Mr. Shiratori, I'm happy to say, 9 years later, is completely cancer-free. For anyone suffering from a physical illness, I urge you to watch this film because it will provide, I think, great help and inspiration for you. The other films which will be shown will be The Invocation and Femme by French Hollywood film director Emmanuel Eiter, who will also be available by Skype for questions on Sunday night, June 12th, after the films are shown. Invocation is a very profound film with interviews with some of the world's most spiritual people, including the Dalai Lama, Mother Teresa, and before he passed away, Dr. Masaru Emoto. Femme is a wonderful film about how women are changing the world to make this planet a much better place. Out of This World Radio is supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. With this, I want to thank everyone for their donations and support, especially Marku in Finland, Judith in California, Marie and Alan in Camille Island, and everyone around the world who helped help the program and make this planet a better place. I'd also like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including the wonderful Orion Tech Computers of Bend, Oregon, the Tokelin Hotel in beautiful Tokelin, Washington, and the wonderful Krista Boyge Bookstore in Tacoma. We're also looking for sponsors and advertisers for the show, and any advertising on this program will have a worldwide audience in over 70 countries for your goods and services. I also would like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol's been designing my website, providing wonderful support. My friends Michiko Hayashi, as well as Hiro Emoto, Mrs. Emoto, and Dr. Yasuo Nemoto of the Emoto Peace Project in the Emoto office in Tokyo, Japan. My friends in the Galactic Alliance who've been supporting my show. My angelic and earthly family, as well as my wonderful sound engineer Eric and my station manager Eric Krima, without whose support and help this program would not have been possible. Finally, I've started a new spiritual mentoring program. I've been in touch with the other side for 22 years. And if you'd like to get in touch with those people who family and loved ones who passed on, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Or I can be reached as well on my cell phone at 509-750-9793 here in the United States. And with that, I'd like to welcome Dr. Raymond Moody to Out of This World Radio. Dr. Moody, hi, how are you today?
Hello, I'm very well. How about you?
Oh, fine. It's so good to have you on. You know, I've heard about your work for many years, and you've done some incredibly pioneering work on what you call the Life After Life book and also your near-death experiences. If I may say, you are a world-renowned scholar and researcher, and you're considered, I think, the leading authority on near-death experience, a phrase that you coined in the late 70s. The New York Times called you the father of near-death experience. Your background includes a medical degree from the Medical College of Georgia in 1976, a PhD in philosophy from the University of Virginia in 1969, another MA in philosophy from the University of Virginia in 1967, and finally a Bachelor of Arts with honors in philosophy from the University of Virginia in 1966. You're a dynamic lecturer, and you've been heard on MSNBC, NBC Today, ABC's Turning Point, Donahue, Geraldo, The Joan Rivers Show, the Sally Jesse Raphael Show, and many, many other television and radio programs. And with that, Dr. Moody, how did you get interested in this field?
Well, actually, my first interest in life was astronomy, and related to that, what I've been interested in more than anything else since I was 7 years old is the idea that some things that may be very important to us nonetheless don't make any sense at all.
Mm-hmm.
And when this first came to my attention was the first time I ever looked through a telescope. I was about 7 or 8 years old and had an experience, which many have, of thinking about, well, what size and shape is this thing and that we're in, the universe? And then what we all do as kids, of course, is we only think there seem to be only two possibilities. Either it comes to an end in a wall, or it goes on and on forever. But as soon as in our minds we leap out to the wall, we realize, well, doesn't there have to be something on the other side of the wall?
Mm.
So that possibility doesn't make any sense. But nor does the possibility that it just goes on and on and on and on and on forever.
Mm-hmm.
Again, since I was very little, that has intrigued me, because I think the experience of unintelligibility, of not being able to make sense of something, is just a very, very intriguing feeling and experience. And this was emphasized in my life. I was a big reader of Dr. Seuss at that age, and
uh-huh.
comic books, and Edward Lear, and so on. And so when I went to college, now I should also say that my religious background was zero.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, my dad was a military surgeon and officer, mm-hmm. and had a, I'm sure, tough time in World War II in the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way it played out in my life was that when I was a kid, we just didn't go to religious ceremonies and so on. And so the idea of an afterlife, insofar as I had
mm-hmm.
known of it, was just something I knew of from cartoons and so on. I never realized anybody took it seriously. But when I was 18 years old, went to the University of Virginia thinking I would be an astronomy,
mm-hmm.
An astronomer, but quickly got interested in philosophy. And in reading the works of Plato,
mm-hmm.
I found out that Plato and other early Greek philosophers were fascinated by experiences of people they called the revenants, or people who were believed to have died and come back.
Mm.
And to me, it was just intriguing as part of Greek philosophy. And Plato was literally the first person I knew of who took this idea of an afterlife seriously. I thought it was just like as a joke or a fantasy. And it originally came up to me as an idea in Greek philosophy. And then in 1965, I met a professor of psychiatry at the University of Virginia who had actually had such an experience. And his name was Dr. George Ritchie. And George was the first living person I heard this from. And to make a long story short, subsequent to that time, I have interviewed literally thousands of people from all over the world who mm-hmm. Came close to death. Many of them were actually pronounced dead
mm-hmm.
and revived, and quickly realized in talking with all these people that there was a common pattern to their experiences. And it was also intriguing to me in regard to that first question of why some things don't make sense, because really, if you think about it, the idea of an afterlife that we try to express in daily life doesn't make any sense. When we mm-hmm. say there is life after death,
mm-hmm.
well, death just means the final irreversible cessation of life. So when you say there's life after death, you're saying there's life after the final irreversible cessation of life. And so mm-hmm. That was my entree into this, and so it has, I really was in a position where I just didn't know what to think of these things. I always realized from the very beginning that the people who were talking to me were sincere. That much mm-hmm. I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And that they really were, they were reporting what they really believed or thought about their experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I also realized, even in medical school, from talking to one of my own professors who had resuscitated her own mother,
mm-hmm.
that these experiences are not caused by the oxygen deprivation to the brain, because my professor was a professor of medicine, was the first person I heard tell me of what I call a shared death experience, which is really the same phenomenon,
mm-hmm.
Except that it occurs not to somebody who almost dies and returns, but rather to a bystander at the death of someone else. And so,
interesting.
Since these bystanders are not ill or injured, there's no question of the experience being caused by an oxygen cutoff to the brain,
mm-hmm.
and yet they report to us identically the same thing we hear from the from patients who almost die in return.
Mm-hmm.
So that is basically what I have done in life and how it manifested from my early interest in questions that, though they are important, that we can't really get a mental grip on.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. And that's fascinating that you've had an interest in trying to explain the unexplained. That's what's also driven me as well. And I've actually had an interest in the afterlife as well, Dr. Moody, ever since back in February of 1978, when unfortunately I was hit head-on by a drunk driver at 110 miles an hour. And I spent 6 days in a coma and did a lot of traveling, a lot of interesting mm-hmm. things. I know it was not my time to go yet. And then when my dad passed away in March of 1999, my foster mother knew me, and he got in contact with her, and he described the death experience and what went on when he passed over. So it answered a lot of questions, because I always had a feeling there was something more to this existence, Dr. Moody, than just this life. And I never thought that death was the final, the final say in a person's life.
Yeah, I think there's two ways, or so many, many ways of looking at this. But,
mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. When I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
I was about, 7 years old, 8 mm-hmm. years old, mm-hmm. and my dad moved to this town in the South to start practicing surgery. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those towns where there was a church on every corner, right? And my dad, not okay. being religious,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I see in retrospect, I was too young to realize this at the time, but
mm-hmm.
In retrospect, the doctors who were more conventionally Christian, I guess, weren't too receptive to my dad.
Mm-hmm.
But the Jewish physicians in town, of course, to them, the afterlife wasn't a big deal anyway. So mm-hmm. my initial experience with religious people was mostly with our Jewish friends, because
mm-hmm.
They didn't, as I said, they were fine with Dad being a free thinker.
Mm-hmm.
And in that tradition, as I have come to realize, there's a kind of attitude of pay attention to this life and don't think about anything beyond it.
Mm-hmm.
Because while you're here, you're here, and the purpose is to be here.
Right.
And so that idea has sort of infused my life until fairly recent. I mean, it still does in a way. There's a certain kind of aesthetic appeal to that, just the idea that you're born and you die, and, mm-hmm. and pay attention to this experience.
Mm-hmm.
But gradually over the years, I've just gotten to the point where it's I am at a loss of what to say. For example,
mm-hmm.
and I'm only giving this one as a fairly recent example of a recurrent pattern I hear all the time,
mm-hmm.
and that is in April of a year ago,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I was in Italy. And mm-hmm. I should say parenthetically that medical doctors now are getting very interested in the near-death experiences, mm-hmm. not necessarily from the point of view of life after death, but just mm-hmm. from the point of view of what is this? Because we see it happens very frequently
sure.
to our patients who mm-hmm. are almost dying and are revived. Mm-hmm. And so lots more doctors showing up at my lectures. And in Italy, this surgeon came up and he looked, the word I would use is haunted, but I don't want to imply anything negative. It was just that mm-hmm. you could tell from his eyes that he had been through something. He really, really had affected him very deeply. Mm-hmm. So he led me over to the corner in this room mm-hmm. Where I'd lectured, and he mm-hmm. told me that sometime before he had been doing an elective operation, and I forgot what, but it wasn't anything serious, really. It was just an elective procedure, and this man, he said, was in good health, actually, overall good health. Mm-hmm. So there was no thought that anything untoward might happen during the surgery. But
sure.
in the event, the man had a cardiac arrest on the table.
Oh, no.
And try as he might, the surgeon was unable, in the end, to resuscitate the patient.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
he said he was beside himself, and he was just... And he was thinking, you know, like, well, what happened, and what am I going to tell the family, and so on.
Sure.
And suddenly, he said, the operating room door swung open, mm-hmm. and a woman came in, and he said his first thought was that this woman was psychotic. She was yelling and screaming about something.
Oh,
and
no.
You know how when you're stressed out, you have trouble making sense of what anybody's saying anyway? But
sure.
he said he had to focus in on her face and think, what is she saying? And he realized she was saying, my husband is not dead.
Oh.
And she was yelling. She said, I was in the waiting room, and my husband came to me, and he said, that you think he's dead and that I should come in here and tell you that he's not dead.
Oh, wow.
And the surgeon told me he was so flabbergasted that he literally doesn't remember resuming the resuscitation.
Hmm.
But he did. Just automatic, you know, the mm-hmm. instinct took over.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, after a while, the patient's heart started beating again.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And he said that he was there in the recovery room.
Mm-hmm.
When the patient regained consciousness, and he said mm-hmm. the first thing the patient said to him was, mm-hmm. I was out of my body up at the ceiling, and I looked down there. I could see mm-hmm. see you, and I could tell you thought I was dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept trying to tell you I wasn't dead, but you wouldn't hear me.
Oh,
so I
well.
Went out into the waiting room, and I tried to tell my wife to come in here and tell you I'm not dead.
Mm.
And I could go on and relate other similar examples, but at a certain point, you see, it becomes increasingly difficult to think my way out of this. So,
right.
So I do think that we are now into a totally new era
mm-hmm.
on how to think about these experiences and the whole question of life after death. I should say that in August, a mm-hmm. book is being published by the University of Missouri Press,
mm-hmm.
and it's entitled The Science of Near-Death Experiences,
mm-hmm.
and it is a collection of articles by physicians who have had near-death experiences or
oh.
who have studied them that was published for 18 months in the journal, the medical journal, the very respected medical journal, I might add,
mm-hmm.
of Missouri Medicine, had a fascinating series of these. And so it really does seem to me that we are into an era where we've pretty much forced to come up with entirely new ways of thinking about this
mm-hmm.
question
mm-hmm.
because it's in a way, you see, I became interested in the afterlife question and near-death experiences from a philosophical context.
Oh, how interesting.
But now, the afterlife seems to be intruding itself very directly and dramatically into the latest medical technology.
Well, I think in the future, Dr. Moody, that it'll become even more accepted in the medical field and across society that there's more than meets the eye according to our own existence. I just wanted with that just make a quick station announcement that for those who just tuned in, this is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr. We're interviewing the wonderful and very interesting Dr. Raymond Moody on his near-death experiences. I want to tell you, you know, I came from a psychic family. I've been in touch with the other side for many years. And I had a lot of questions, too, when I first started my own spiritual quest, Dr. Moody. And a lot of questions really got answered when my dad passed over and he started getting in contact with my foster mother, who was a master psychic. She used to work for the Seattle Police Department finding missing and lost children. And so she taught me how to contact the other side. And many times the spirits on the other side, of course, told me what they went through in the near-death experience. About a year and a half, 2 years ago, I was very fortunate to get in contact with Professor Albert Einstein. And one of the messages he wanted me to give you today, Dr. Moody, is that he really likes your work because you're introducing people to another side of life, basically. There's no such thing as death, he says. But he's also building what he calls a spiritual phone on the other side, on his side, with other scientists, including Leonardo da Vinci and Michel de Nostradamus. And he'd like to link up with scientists such as yourself so the two dimensions could link up and people in this dimension would be able to call up their loved ones and friends and family who've passed on as easy as it is now to dial up on a phone number. Would you be interested in perhaps linking up with him? I can put you in touch with him.
Tell me again, then. I missed part of that.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'll speak up. It's I've been in contact with Professor Albert Einstein on the other side.
Yes, you mentioned
side.
That.
And he's working with Leonardo da Vinci and Michel de Nostradamus on constructing what he calls a spiritual phone that will enable people.
Oh, yes. You know, I've read a little bit about this.
Okay.
And I would like to know more about that sort of project. However,
okay.
I also want to say, I would, definitely, yes.
Okay.
However, I always also want to say that, you know, I can't even operate my own cell phone. And I'm one of those people, I still use a pad and pen to write and so on.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, what I think is really interesting in this, is speaking of Einstein and other people who've made that kind of leap, I think that the real difficulty in terms of thinking rationally about the afterlife question is that the logic we have doesn't work for the purpose. And the reason
true.
Is that the logic we use in everyday life is sort of based on Aristotle's third law of thought, as it's called, or the principle of non-contradiction. And so Aristotelian logic can't compute a self-contradictory sentence like life after death. So what I am working on is an entirely new logic. It's an entirely new set of rational principles for us to use when we think about things that don't make sense. And, you know, the way that this entire debate has been carried on now for a long time is with the idea that we can comprehend the possibility of life after death with the logic that we have now and the mind that we have now. And that makes it a static principle, right, that we've got to stick with what we have.
Right.
My approach to the problem is that we can actually add new rational principles, a new logic, and we can actually reformat our mind so that we can think rationally about this. And that's the approach that I'm working on. But, yeah, I would like to hear about this other
All right. I will meditate this weekend, and then let's talk early next week. I'll send you an email with some messages from Professor Einstein. The other person I wanted to mention to you, too, is a friend of mine named Professor Irvin Laszlo. You probably know him.
Yes, I do know him.
Yeah, great man. He's writing a book now. I'm not sure when it's coming out. It's called What is Consciousness? And he goes into other dimensions as well. So, and I think from what I know of the other side, Dr. Moody, is that the Aristotelian, the logic that you mentioned is good for this third dimension. But when you go into the other dimensions on the other side, the logic breaks down. I mean, it's like your book, Life After Life, or Life After Death, because the terms are contradictory. How can you have life after death? But it's a paradox. But and I think it's true, though, that there's really no such thing as death in a way, that life continues, albeit in a different form, in a different dimension. But it continues, even though we may not be able to see it physically with our eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, or the way I've come to think of it is, even when I was a kid, I had a sense that that life as we know it has a sort of dreamlike quality.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
guess I was sort of born philosophical, always with a distrust of, I'm always kind of thinking ahead of my senses.
Uh-huh.
And thinking that maybe the essence of this world that we're in is very different from what we're imagining. And I'm 71 years old now, and what mm-hmm. I have, for example, as an undergraduate philosophy student, studied Kant and his mm-hmm. Ideas about time, but to sort of abbreviate that or condense it, the idea is that mm-hmm. time is not out there exactly, that time and space are built into us. They are concepts or lenses, as it were, through which we view reality, and they don't really pertain to an external world. And that was the sense I always had. And what I've seen now with life development, that naturally you kind of reach that point. My wife, who is very brilliant, and at the same time she's about 12 years younger than me chronologically, but at the same time she's much further along on the maturational scale. She's very mature, but even she's really, really brilliant. I mean, this soaring IQ. Very, very high IQ and very brilliant, but she is not intellectual, which is very good for me, you see. She applies her intelligence to a different sphere of activity, and yet she has reached that same point now, this sort of realization that many people gain as we grow older, that time, which seems to be real, if anything is, it is actually to use the word, I guess it's an illusion, right?
That's true. I agree.
So what I have come to see is that, at least, you know, the idea I have reached is that what presents itself to the world, to me, through my senses, that there's something wrong with that, and that there's a higher picture. And it's very, very difficult to put into words, as you know, I'm sure, the most common thing that people with near-death experiences tell us, no matter how articulate they may be, and no matter how many degrees, no matter how many languages they speak, they all say that the experience they had is what William James, the American psychologist, called ineffable or just indescribable. And I think that is about to change. I think we have entirely new conceptual means that we can pre-equip people who we can pre-equip people with a new set of logical principles that when by chance, just by happenstance, some of those people are who are prepared with these new ideas will just happen later to have a near-death experience. And when they come back, I am very, very confident that they are going to have entirely new means to articulate this and to put it into words for the rest of us. I think that we are on the verge here of a conceptual revolution in the way that we think about these things. I am really very confident about that. I'm cheating on that a little bit because it's actually happened already. This physicist and artist that I happened to take one of my courses on this new logic of 7 or 8 years ago, subsequently, just by chance, developed a terrible infection and had a couple of near-death experiences during his hospitalization. And he specifically mentioned that the logical principles that he had learned earlier gave him entirely new ways to think about his near-death experience. So I just think I've got to agree with you that even though it's very hard to put into words, I'm getting the sense that, I guess continuity is about a good a word for it as we can come up with, given that there's no time. But the way I've come to think of it is, I think it's kind of like an actor walking off the stage. Elie Wiesel, if you know who he was, but you sound a little bit young to me, but being 71, I can remember high school, I'm pretty sure. Elie Wiesel won the Nobel Prize for Literature, and he had been in Auschwitz and was made some wonderful reflections on that experience through through his writings. And Elie said, God made man because he loves stories. And where I have come on that is kind of like that what is your personal identity but your story, right? That consciousness itself has a sort of narrative pointing or a built-in narrative component to it, because, you know, whatever new event occurs to us in our life, we add it to our story, right? The consciousness is constantly integrating new things that happen to us and putting it in the context of our life story.
That's right.
Well, I gather that when you die, it's just like, it's like I said, like an actor walking off the stage. And then I think we go through an incomprehensible process. Although we lead a narrative existence here, our life is kind of the story. I gather from the thousands of people who I've talked with who've had near-death experiences that existence in the afterlife does not take the form of a story. You're no longer in a narrative existence. Nor are you anymore in a time or space existence. And I've really, asked a lot of very articulate people, what is it like over there? And they say that it's not temporal or spatial, but it has its own organizing principle, and that it's more information, if I could use that word, that we live an informational existence. For example, people tell me that when you're in this other state, if you want to see something, it's you don't experience the transition from point A to point B, but rather you just think of it and it's immediately manifest.
That's
it's like
true.
Your consciousness goes there. as it were. So
that's true.
Yeah, I just in the past couple of years, I mean, I always knew that the people who were telling me these stories were sincere. That mm-hmm. much I knew.
Mm-hmm.
But what I never, and I knew that it wasn't the oxygen deprivation to the brain.
Right.
Because if that's true, why would people who are at the bedside of the dying, who are not ill or injured nonetheless, have all of these elements of near-death experiences, including leaving their own bodies and going partway toward this light with their dying loved one, or seeing the room fill with light, or seeing apparitions of the dying person's deceased relatives coming in as though to escort the dying person away.
Sure, sure.
And even cases where the bystanders have empathically co-lived the dying life review of the person who passes away.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing?
So I always knew that the conventional neurophysiological explanation was not the case.
Oh.
But what it was, I just didn't know.
Sure.
But as we were both saying, I've just reached the point in my life where I give up, for want of a better term. I mean, as maybe an incomprehensible that phrase life after death is, nonetheless, it adequately, not adequately, but that it's the best we have to talk about what appears to be some other reality or levels of reality, I should say, that into which our consciousness passes when we die. People say it's like coming out of a dream.
Yeah.
You know, in the morning when we wake up, we feel like we're coming back to reality, and
that's true.
Trying to hold on to the dream story, which seems very incoherent, and you get the sense in the morning that you're coming back to reality from the dream. Well, that's exactly what people who have a near-death experience say, except that this reality that we're in now is the dream.
Doctor,
and that when they die, paradoxically, they enter into a state of consciousness that they uniformly tell us is hyper-real or more real than real.
Right, right. Well, Dr. Moody, I wanted to ask you, several years ago, I met my dad in a dream, and he took me over to the other side. It was like a family reunion with all my relatives and loved ones who'd passed on in the previous years. And when I came back, I felt totally in a very blissful state, and there was my friends noticed that I had actually a kind of a white glow around me for several days thereafter. And I was wondering, have you yourself had any experience like that where you visited the other side in a dream state, if you remember your dreams?
I haven't. However, I have a brother that, even though he is terribly, terribly bright, and he does enjoy intellectual things, he is, in his life work very, and his approach to life very, very concrete.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I think my brother really is smarter than I am in terms of, actual intelligence, but it's just that he has devoted his intelligence to the practical world, and he doesn't think much about this kind of thing. And some years ago, he told me of an experience such as you describe. He said it happened when he was asleep, so he had to call it a dream, but that it did not have the character of a dream. And again, it had this episode of hyper-reality. Mm-hmm. And he said that there in this vision or in this state were my mother and father, who had passed on, and an uncle of ours.
Oh, really?
And he said that in the dream state, he was puzzled that why our uncle, who was still alive, was there. And he said, in addition to my parents and other relatives who had died, this kind of family reunion, as you describe,
Nice.
He said there were other people that he didn't know exactly who he was, who they were, but he said that when he asked one or expressed puzzlement that my living uncle was there, that the response was that, oh, this uncle, let's call him Uncle Ted, is kind of able to go back and forth.
Oh,
and
interesting.
Mm-hmm. Even at the time, it struck me that that was accurate of this uncle. I mean, I don't want to call my uncle a saint because, I mean, he wasn't, I don't even know what to call him. He was always just a person of complete kindness.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw him be unkind to anyone. And he had a career with the Postal Service, and then he retired. And then, just because he was such a public-spirited person, he went down and filled out a form to run for county commissioner or something.
Oh,
and
really?
Was elected for a 2-year term, I think it was. And then for the next couple of decades, he was. He never again applied to run for that position, but he always was elected because people just wrote him in.
Oh, that's beautiful.
He was so utterly immune to corruption or that sort of thing. And I knew already when I heard that from my brother that the Greeks recognized this. They call them the walkers between worlds.
Interesting.
Even some of the early Greek philosophers were convinced that there were some people who had sort of a dual existence that they could sort of pass over. And my uncle has subsequently died. You know, I mean, it just struck me when my brother said that. And my brother, too, again, who is just so completely concrete. I mean, you know, he is in a profession where you, I mean, it's just, it's a very grounding profession, let's put it this way. He's a construction person, and, I mean, he has to, he is the man, I mean, he's the owner of the firm, right? And you can imagine the travails and crazy making. Thing that comes with that sort of activity, but it's just completely grounded. And so, yeah, and I've heard this sort of experience from others, too, that sometimes from the state of sleep, sometimes from ordinary waking awareness and without even being injured or ill or near death, I do. I understand that this happens to a lot of people.
Fascinating, fascinating. Well, Dr. Moody, I wanted to mention the wonderful conference that both of you and I will be going to as speakers in Montreal from August 12th through the 19th. I wanted to mention this for our dear friend Marilyn Rosner. It's called the IIIHS Conference, and it's in Montreal, Canada. And the website is www.onenessinspirit.org, onenessinspirit.org. And and you'll be presenting there as well.
I will. I've been going to that conference since 1977, and it's one that's always excellent. So I would urge people to come. And there's also a lot of time in that context for interaction with the speakers and so on. It's literally people come from all over the world, and it was founded by Dr. John Rosner and his wife, Dr. Marilyn Rosner, back in the 70s, and it's a consistently good conference with all kinds of interesting speakers from all over the world. So by all means, come. I hope people will come. And it's a very good place.
Wonderful, wonderful. And if they need more information, please call their headquarters, the office in Montreal. Their phone number in Montreal is area code 514 937-8359, or you can always call me as well here at 1-888-879-8339, which is a toll-free number in the United States and Canada, or you can also email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Dr. Moody, you know, it's been so wonderful to have you on. We've got about 5 minutes left, And I wanted to give you an opportunity to focus in on any subject you like. Perhaps the questions that people ask about near-death experiences, or perhaps a really interesting story you'd like to share with my many listeners.
Well, yes, you know, something does come to mind. And, you know, that is that one of my favorite interests in philosophy was logic. Uh-huh. Logic and the philosophy of language were my main areas of philosophy. And,
interesting.
So in logic, I always taught my students about what's called the appeal to authority, and that is that it's not a valid argument to say that something is true because people with a doctoral degree behind their name say so, right? Mm-hmm. So that would be that I would preface what I'm going to say by that one, you know, the appeal to authority is not always, it's sometimes a very weak case. Mm-hmm. And yet, having said that, I've got to admit that I am in a very puzzling situation with respect to my medical colleagues. Mm-hmm. I have so many medical colleagues who have had near-death experiences and whose judgment I would trust completely, medical judgment, if, for example, I had to consult somebody in their specialty. Mm-hmm. I am in a situation now where unanimously all these people tell me that, oh yeah, this is real. I had a near-death experience. I was on the other side.
Right.
And so I'm trusting of their medical judgment. And so you see that creates a kind of dilemma,
oh,
right? Like, what am I to say? I mean, in a way you sort of reach the point where you give up. And so just to give you a recent example, there is a wonderful man whose name is Dr. Anthony Cicoria, C-I-C-C-O-R-I-A. And Anthony is a PhD in physiology, and he is also an MD, has an MD, and he is also professor of orthopedics. At Upstate New York Medical School at NYU, and just a thoroughly delightful person. And again, if heaven forbid something was wrong with my foot, of course I would go to Anthony and trust his medical judgment completely.
Sure.
Some years ago, he was struck in the neck by a bolt of lightning.
Oh my goodness!
Which exited his ankle and gave him a cardiac arrest.
Oh no.
Fortunately, there was a nurse on the spot who resuscitated him, and he, in this really amazing near-death experience, had this really amazing near-death experience, which is something I have heard many times before. Now, Anthony had never had any interest in music, but after this, unaccountably, he began to have this recurrent dream in which he was playing on a concert stage, playing the same music.
Wow.
And he had this dream recurrently. He got interested in the piano, and to make a long story short, now in addition to his very distinguished career as a physiologist and professor of orthopedic surgery, he is also a very accomplished concert pianist.
Isn't that amazing?
That's an amazing
story.
And I could go on and give you lots and lots of stories like that of friends of mine who who are medical doctors who have had their lives transformed by these experiences. We really are into an era now where this is going to come more and more into the public view because leaps and bounds are being made in the resuscitation procedure, and we are bringing people back from states closer and closer to death, and they all have us the same story to tell of an adventure into another dimension of reality.
You know what's comforting for family members and friends who've lost loved ones to know that there's no such thing as death, and that they do exist on the other side. And as Professor Einstein's doing now, trying to build this spiritual phone so in the future, he said maybe 5, maybe probably 10 years from now, family and loved ones will be able just to dial up their friends, much like making a telephone call to the other side to talk to one people who've passed on.
Oh, my goodness. I got to say that when I see our phone bill every month.
Well, Dr.
Yeah.
Woody, we've...
And also, never take a collect call over one of those things.
Really. All right.
Yes. But yes, right. I mean, I just, I don't know what to say about that because
sure,
like I said,
sure,
I'm just
sure.
So totally unmechanical.
Sure.
But,
Dr. Moody,
but I am very intrigued by that idea.
Oh, wonderful.
So thank you so much for that. And thank you so much for this wonderful conversation, too. I'm looking forward to seeing you in Montreal in August.
Me too, Dr. Moody. Have a wonderful day, and thank you so much for coming on my show today. I look forward to seeing you in August, my friend.